Coming up on This Week in Radio Tech, Dave Daugherty is with us. It's been about 3 years since we've seen Dave on the show, and he's back to talk about the upcoming LPFM filing window. And if you're interested in that, there's some things that you need to know. And you know what? Even if you're not planning on filing for an LPFM as a broadcast engineer, you should be able to answer some basic questions when people ask you or to protect your own radio station. That's all coming up next on TWRT.
This Week in Radio Tech is brought to you by Broadcasters General Store, with outstanding service, savings, and support, online at bgs.cc. By Broadcast Bionics, with the Bionic Studio, including talk show control, social media, and visual radio, Broadcast Bionics brings exceptional audience engagement to radio and TV. By Angry Audio, audio problems disappear when you get angry at angryaudio.com.
By Nautel, worry-free transmission you can count on with outstanding control, reliability, efficiencies, and Nautel's unmatched 24/7 customer support, online at Nautel.com.
And by MaxConnect Wireless, prioritized high-speed internet service designed for transmitter sites and remote broadcasts.
Hey, welcome into This Week in Radio Tech, the show where we talk about everything from the microphone to that light bulb at the top of the tower. I am Kirk Harnack, your host, and I'm here in the Telos Alliance studio in Nashville, Tennessee. Delighted to be here. It's another hot end of summer day, although it's not as hot as I guess it could be. It's 83 degrees and sunshiny here in Nashville. We had thunderstorms come through a day or two ago, and a little cool air came in behind it, so that was refreshing and nice. I'm sure we'll get back to the hot weather here in the next few days. Chris Tarr may be joining us. He's not here right now. We're checking in with Chris to see if he's going to be here. But importantly, who is here is our guest, and our guest is Dave Daugherty. It's been almost 3 years since Dave's been on. Dave, welcome in. Good to see you.
Hey, good to see you, Kirk.
Dave Daugherty, you're here to answer questions and to tell us about an event that's actually coming up in about half a month, about 3 weeks away, and that is something to do with LPFM. Give us a little elevator pitch on what's coming up in the next hour.
Okay, well, we're going to talk about LPFM, what the service is, who's qualified to be a licensee, and we'll take a look at some engineering studies that I've pre-produced for the show, and you know, obviously can be done anywhere in the country. The next event, the big event for LPFM now is a filing window for new stations, and also major changes for existing stations that would be changed from one location to another that's farther than the normal distance or stuff. And usually in a window like this, you don't get many major change applications. The new station window opens November 1st, and it will be open for a week. It's the first one that we've had for new LPFM stations in 10 years. So it's a big deal.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Dave, I'm sorry. I was confused. For some reason, I was in my head. I was thinking that the window opens September. Is it September or just said November?
The window opens in November. What happens on September 1st is a freeze for existing stations, low power stations, and translators to propose changes. So between now and September 1st, if anybody's been thinking about making a change, this would be the time to go ahead and file that application. Once the application's in, it gets cut off on September 1st, and all LPFM applicants have to respect that application, protect that application.
Okay, that's making sense now. Okay.
Event. And then as we get closer, there'll be an announcement about changes to full service stations. There'll be a much, much shorter freeze on that, probably just maybe even just the duration of the window. And the whole idea here is to give everybody an equal set of data to work with. Where are stations? Because LPFMs are allocated based on distance from other stations. And so if you have a station that could be potentially in conflict, it's moving, you need to know that, and that can't change during the window because everybody's assuming they have the same data, and all applications filed during a filing window are assumed to be filed as of close of business on the last day of the window. They're all considered contemporaneous. There's no advantage to filing on day one, and there's no disadvantage to filing on the last day.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, that makes sense. Equal. Hey, Dave, we're going to hear from Nautel, but before we do, I got two very quick questions for you that kind of have to do with our one of our sponsors. What transmitter power output level do LPFMs typically use? What range of powers would they need to purchase?
Depends on the antenna and on the height, because once you get above 30 meters above average terrain, the amount of effective radiated power you can run drops dramatically as you increase with height. But for a typical 100 watt ERP, 30 meter above average terrain, if you don't have a second adjacent window kind of interference showing that requires a special antenna, you're probably going to use one bay or maybe two. If you use two bays, the transmitter power output will likely be something like 120-130 watts. Use one bay, probably more like 250. So, you know, depending on where you're going, there's a lot of transmitters out there that are 150 watts. There's a lot that are 300 watts.
That makes sense somewhere between
those two models.
And of all the radio stations that I'm part owner of, with Larry Fuss and some other owners at our different properties, we don't have any LPFMs, and I've never engineered for an LPFM. We do have some translators, and we have a number of full power stations. Now, the other question is, can an LPFM transmit HD radio?
Yes. No reason why you couldn't. The economics of it may be way out of reach.
If you have a specific need,
you know, like, for example, a college or a tribe or something, you know, where there's a specific controlled audience where you can basically hand out HD receivers and operate a second or third program service, there's no reason why you couldn't do it.
I've got
two translators that are running HD on mountaintops that have fabulous coverage out here.
Well, yeah, good deal. Okay, that makes sense. Now, Dave, we're going to take just a minute and talk about our sponsor, Nautel. And I'm going to ask Suncast if he'll show the webpage for Nautel's VS. Oh, no, we're going to back up. I'm sorry, Suncast. I want the VS series of transmitters. I'm sorry if I thought I sent you the right link, but I may not have. Nautel has been making this VS series of transmitters for quite a long time, and I've got a few of these. And I never have installed HD before myself. I've consulted many stations that have installed HD. Typically, I have consulted them on audio processing for HD because my employer, one of our companies, is Omnia. And so we've been in the world of HD processing or processing for HD as well as FM for years now, and even some AMs, AM plus HD. But just recently, earlier this week, was my first opportunity, along with my friend Russell Lafferty, to install an HD. And we did it. The transmitter we have, the one that we've been kind of saving and using other places so we could finally put it in place here, was a Nautel VS 2.5. So it's 2.5 kilowatts. And we've used it in service for several stations just for analog service. But we knew we were doing HD on this new station in Oxford, Mississippi at Ole Miss University. And that's where it is. The station belongs to us, not Ole Miss. And so we had to purchase the HDFM exciter from Nautel, and we turned off the exciter that's built into the VS series, and then we added the HD Multicast Plus, which is the importer and exporter together in one box. And oh my goodness, Russ and I pulled the VS series transmitter out of the rack, and there's some jumpers that you move around in order to prepare it to be fed from an external exciter. And it comes with instructions. They're easy to follow. Well, we take the panels, the top and the bottom, off this transmitter, and we start finding notes written by yours truly, where I had to replace an amplifier pallet and replaced, I think, a power supply, maybe a fan. I mean, the transmitter's 10 years old, so it had a couple of things that I fixed on it over the years. Well, in fact, there's even a YouTube video of me replacing one of the amplifier pallets on this very transmitter. I couldn't believe this is the same transmitter. I had lost track of that. So we did that, Russ and I, and put it back together, hooked the HD exciter to it, and then the multicast. And, you know, I'm just so impressed that I can use a 10-year-old transmitter that we had I mean, it was designed for this, but we had no intention originally of using it for HD service. And we modified it according to some simple directions, added the HD exciter, added the HD multicast box. And wow, we got three HD channels, HD 1, 2, and 3 on the air pretty easily. We were just really impressed by how that worked out. And this is because of the really good engineering that Nautel does. So that's why I'm singing their praises, not just because they're a sponsor, but I just want to tell you about my happy, good experience with a Nautel VS series transmitter this past week. And just really love it. We had to upgrade the software in it. That went just fine. Put it onto a thumb drive and let it do its thing. Took about 20 minutes or so to get that all done. And it just worked out well. So we're delighted. We're transmitting in Oxford, Mississippi. We're transmitting FM plus HD 1, HD 2, and HD 3, and they sound fantastic. We're using Omnia processing, of course, on all the signals, and it sounds so good. So thanks a lot, Nautel, for writing good manuals, making it easy to do, and a little bit of tech support along the way. We really appreciate it. And Nautel is a great place to stay tuned to for their Transmission Talk Tuesdays. We'll tell you about the next one whenever it is scheduled, and give you a little fair warning about that. I'll be having dinner with Jeff Welton this coming Sunday evening, and I'll be asking him about that coming up. All right. Thanks a lot, Nautel, for sponsoring This Week in Radio Tech. Nautel.com is the website. All right. Let's see. Dave Doherty is with us, and Dave's talking about LPFM. And Dave, LPFM, I'm a fairly typical engineer, but somehow I've just missed doing any work for or with any LPFM station. So I'm a sponge soaking up the information that you're telling me about LPFMs. Can you give me a little tiny bit of history? Why were LPFMs even made into a thing as opposed to translators? What's different about LPFMs, and what are they really meant to do?
Okay, so an LPFM is intended to be a local community radio voice covering a small area, typically going to be associated with a school or a church or a local organization. You can only have one unless you're a community that's operating a public service on the LPFM, and then you can have two. And tribes can have two. As long as both transmitters are located on tribal grounds and they're licensed to the tribe. They're strictly non-commercial. You cannot get an LPFM license as an individual. Only organizations are permitted to have LPFM licenses. Best if they're IRS certified 501c3, not for profit, and certified by the state. The fundamental thing is you just cannot run commercials. That's no announcement that compares somebody's product with somebody else's, say, this is the best widget that was ever made. Can't do it. You can't have a call to action like if you listen to PBS a lot or NPR a lot, you won't hear them say on a sponsorship announcement. Sponsorship announcements are okay on LPFM.
Okay, so underwriting announcements are okay.
Yeah. Okay. But you will not hear on NPR an underwriting announcement that says, go to the website at www.blah, blah, 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 blah for more information, because that is a call to action. That is asking the listener to do something.
Right.
You will hear more information is available at that same website.
Sure.
Okay.
Sure.
And that's why peculiar language is pretty much endemic in NPR sponsorship ads. It's the same with LPFM or with not NPR, just any non-commercial radio or TV station. No call to action. Next time you're in town, visit so and so's restaurant because the food's really good there. None of that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. But we could say
sponsorship announcements are fine.
What we could say, this hour of programming is made possible by a generous grant from Dave Doherty, a proprietor of Dave Doherty's Greasy Spoon, and they're located at blah, 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 open for breakfast and lunch every day.
You might
I didn't call to action. I just gave information.
Yeah, and that's probably about as far as it can possibly go.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
It's very, very limited. So nobody's going to make any money running an LPFM. Okay? To begin with, the coverage area is very small. You have the same programming challenge on a 100-watt LPFM as you have on a 100-kilowatt Class C station. That programming requirement runs 24/7. You got to feed it. You got to continue to feed programming to it all the time. For an LPFM, the minimum, well, not the minimum, but what they look for in evaluating applications is a commitment to program live 8 hours a day. It's a
Oh,
pretty significant commitment.
it is.
Now, that can be a DJ studio records, it could be live performances, it could be anything like that. What it cannot be is a satellite feed, an automation system there plugging away for 24 hours a day with somebody programming it from somewhere else. There is a requirement for a local studio in the community. There is a requirement that all board members on the organization be located within 10 miles of the transmitter location in a large community and 20 miles in smaller communities. So
Wow.
it's very, very focused on localism. The Local Community Radio Act was basically designed to for to support this kind of local programming, where it was perceived that there was a significant need for it. And there's a lot of LPFM stations out
So my question then would be, it seems if you want, if your organization thinks an LPFM is what you need to serve the people interested in the same things you're interested in, let's say a tribal community, or an ethnic community in a city, but here in Nashville, where I live, is a large no, there's a large Hispanic community, mostly in a certain area of town, although spread out. There's a large number of people from East Africa, Ethiopians and Kenyans. That I don't know if they're spread out or if they're in a certain area of town, but they're definitely areas of town, and certainly many, many cities have this. But my question is, let's imagine you're a tribal community and an LPFM seems like the right thing. Why wouldn't you just go ahead and apply for a Class A FM? What is the upside to an LPFM over the regular commercial Class A route?
Getting a commercial or non-commercial full service station is a totally different animal.
It sure is. Yeah.
To get a commercial Class A, let's say, you would have to do a frequency search and show that a frequency is available in the community you want to serve, that the community is it qualifies as a community, and that it has a local government, it has some local stuff going on.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And then you go to the FCC with an application for a new station, along with a petition for rulemaking to allocate the channel to that town.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So the next step is the FCC says, yeah, okay, we like this idea. And they go out and they say, okay, we have a proposed rulemaking to serve Smallville with a new Class A on 97.7 or whatever. And they open it up to competing applications. Well, maybe 97.7 works in Tigerville over here or someplace else, and people can come in and say, okay, they can file competing applications for to allocate that channel to other communities. And if that happens, then they go through a whole analysis called a 307B analysis, which determines which of the proposed communities is more preferred from among the proposals. They allocate the channel to that community. And then, and that process probably takes 2 or 3 years. Once that's gone through, then the channel comes up for auction at the next commercial FM auction. When was the last time we had one? In a long time. I don't remember. It's been years. So, you're embarking to create a new commercial station in a community. You're paying up front for the engineering and for the application fee. You're certainly paying lawyers to get it done. You're probably paying lawyers and engineers to work on the comparative, community showings, which one's better. And at the end of that process, even if it gets assigned to your town of Smallville, you do not get a pioneer preference. You get nothing for that, all that effort. Anybody can come in and bid on that channel and beat you out. So there's
gotcha.
There's no assurance in this. It's a difficult business plan.
A
new commercial station.
Gotcha. I've been through the process, or my business partner Larry Fuss has certainly been through that process, and I'm sure many have. So there's no pioneer preference like there was decades ago. There may be some minority preferences, but still you got to have money. You got to bid on this auction process, right?
Yeah, you got to have money, and if you own other stations, you're automatically at a disadvantage because there's a new entrant preference. You don't own stations and you bid, your bid is worth more than the number of dollars you bid.
I'm just thinking, what a crazy way to allocate radio stations. I mean, I know it's such a patchwork, and it's made sense each step of the way to the political pressures that went into it. But what if we hired airline pilots this way? Okay, whoever has the most money and it's the first time they've flown an airplane, you'll get the job to fly the airplane.
That's pretty much the way it would work. It's a system that's evolved over, 50, 60 years, really. Little changes. One case determines a priority, a precedent that affects every case that follows. And sometimes these things aren't decided well, and it just gets to be a snowball.
I don't think that's the commercial thing. Yeah. And we're here to talk about LPFMs, which we'll continue in just a minute. But people still ask me, how do I get a radio station? How do I apply for a new station? Your best bet these days is to buy an existing station, because most of them are on sale. Yeah, some of them are on fire sale, but my business partner in radio stations, Larry Fuss, we have picked up, now, small town Mississippi, small town Hawaii. We have a Hawaii station, but we got it for what I think is a pretty low price. But there are stations all across America that are for sale for far less than it costs to build them.
Yep.
And maybe less money than you would get one at auction, if there even was an auction. So if you want a radio station, buy one that's already on the air. But also, if you wanted to buy a gas station on the strip in Las Vegas, it's going to cost you millions. If you want to buy a gas station at the corner of Short and Main Street in West Undershirt, Arkansas, you can have it for a song. Probably put it on a credit card, right?
Yeah.
All right. Hey, we're talking to,
that's how it works.
Yeah. Yeah. We're talking to Dave Daugherty, and Dave, you provided some graphics and some file output from the FCC that's terribly interesting, and I want to get to it, but we are going to get to an advertisement first, one of our sponsor messages, and I'm sorry, I've got to go run and look at my notes. I didn't have them quite ready. Angry Audio and Max Connect, they are the two sponsors in this quick break. And since Chris isn't here, I'm going to tell you about them myself. First of all, Angry Audio. I just got done building a studio in Oxford, Mississippi. And I got to tell you, we put in some Angry Audio headphone amps, the guest gizmo, the headphone gizmo, and they are absolutely delightful to put those in. We're also going to probably be getting one of the little Rave consoles. And if I can get Suncast to go to the Angry Audio website, we're going to look at a couple things. The Rave console, I got to pre-sell this thing. It's just amazing. They are starting to ship any day now. And it's an analog console. It features the Studio Hub connectors for input and output. There it is. It is a beautiful little console. I got to play with and hold a prototype for this thing. The power supply is built in. It's got mic inputs. It's got line inputs and outputs. Now, it's analog. This is not an audio over IP console. And you know how much I love those. But sometimes you just need to mix a few things together with analog ins and analog outs and get you a console. There's the back of it right there. You see all the connectors there on the back. They're for the most part, They are the RJ45 style connector from Studio Hub. Now, there are a few XLR connectors on there for outputs as well. Clear visual meters on the top. The lighting is perfect. The faders feel good. This is one sexy, beautiful little console. And if you're in need of a console, I really encourage you to check this thing out. Channels 1 through 4 are switchable between mics and lines. There's a preview or cue available for every input. The on-off buttons are slightly recessed to prevent accidental actuation. You can talk back to guests, so you have individual headphone outputs, and you can talk back to your guests. There are two mix-minus outputs with talk back, and channels 7 and 8 are capable of that mix-minus. It's got a really nice wrist rest. That's the curved part on the front. Just love this thing. It's an awesome little console, and I'm anticipating that you're going to love it too. I got to put in some other Angry Audio stuff, and that, you know, for so long I've been talking about the headphone gizmo. That's the one I say you won't snag your pantyhose on because it's nice and curved. Well, I showed one of those to our morning guy in Oxford, Mississippi, and I said, what would you think about this mounted right under here, and you could plug your headphones into it? He loved it, and so I went down to the factory in Franklin, Tennessee, picked one up from Mike Dosh and put it in there just a couple days ago, and our morning guy loves it. It's just a wonderful headphone amp. It has both kinds of input or outputs, the quarter-inch tippering sleeve and the 3.5-millimeter tippering sleeve. Easy to wire up. I ran a little wall wart power supply over to it with 16 volts AC, and then ran my cable from I grabbed a cable off the shelf, a Cat 5 cable, plugged it in, and hooked it up to the output of an Axia X node, and bam, it's just beautiful. So check it out from angryaudio.com. Hey, our show, there's the website right there, Angry Audio. Our show is also brought to you by Max Connect Wireless. And I know for 3 or 4 years now, we've been talking about their wireless IP service that is it's done using Cradlepoint or other modems on the 4G LTE network. And I got to tell you, when the same station in Mississippi, we got that thing hooked up and we had fiber service on order for months, and the fiber supplier was just kind of slow in getting it done. So we put a Max Connect wireless box at the transmitter site and it worked just great. So great. Let me see. Gary Morrill is here and he's going to tell you about it real quick, and I'll be right back. Here's Gary.
I'm Gary Morrill, Midwest Regional Director of Engineering for Alpha Media. When I first spoke with Josh Bone about Max Connect, he told me they'd work great for remote transmitter sites where connectivity was a challenge. And you know, he's absolutely right. We even have sites where we're using this as a backup to our STL using Max Connect's dual carrier option, and it works perfectly. We also have times where we need to be able to get out to a venue where it's kind of challenging because everybody and his brother is trying to stream video at the same time, like at a big sporting event. And you know what? Our data gets through every time because it's prioritized packet data. It works for us. It'll work for you. Max Connect. Check it out.
We checked it out, and we used that Max Connect wireless for almost a month at the transmitter site. We remoted in, got all our stuff configured. We even had streams. We were streaming out of it. Fantastic box, fixed IP address and prioritized data. And we were just absolutely delighted. Now, we got the fiber in this past week on Monday night. The guy finished up the fiber installation. And so now we're off of the Max Connect box. But thank goodness for that lifesaver, the Max Connect wireless box. MaxConnect.com. There's the Max. Yeah, the Max Connect group at MaxConnect.com. I know it's spelled funny. And that's what you need to check out right there. All right. Thanks a lot. Angry Audio and Max Connect for sponsoring This Week in Radio Tech, two companies you need to know about because they'll make your life better as a broadcast engineer. We're talking to Dave Doherty, and we're getting around now to talking about the LPFM window and some interesting LPFM engineering topics. Dave, I'm going to let you direct where we're going to go in our conversation next. We do have some graphics to show, so whenever you're ready, why don't you just let Suncast know, and we'll pop them up on screen.
Okay. Well, so I've been working on software for many, many years, and I tend to be a visual thinker. I like maps, I like diagrams, I like graphs and charts and things like that, rather than, you know, spreadsheets full of numbers. So what I developed here is a visual allocation tool, and I'll give you an example. Suncast, if you could put up the first one. This is a map of the United States, the CONUS, obviously not including Alaska and Hawaii. Everywhere that is red, deep red, those are areas where an LPFM station would be too close to a Channel 6 station. The larger circles are full service Channel 6. The smaller ones are translators, LPTV, Class A TV, stuff like that. So you can see, you know, there's, I think my count was 90 stations operating on Channel 6. And they do have a pretty significant impact in some areas, like look at Pennsylvania, for example. The more salmon color red is areas where an LPFM station would be too close to another station, either a full service station, a translator, another LPFM. And so you would not be able to put an LPFM station in either the darker red or the salmon. The yellow areas are areas where you would meet the minimum spacing requirement, but you could expect to receive interference from other stations. And then the white areas are where you're basically free to go. So if you look at this, see, you know, what you would normally expect. Most of the East Coast is pretty much jammed up. There's a few little spots here and there. There's, you know, South Carolina. There's a couple in Virginia, upstate New York and the Adirondacks and upstate Maine. And then before you to get into any other significant areas, you're into places where population density is very low. Central Oregon, Nevada, the Dakotas, mountain Montana. So this particular one is 88.1, channel 201. FM channels, in addition to frequencies, FM frequencies are associated with channel numbers that go from 201 for 88.1 to 300 for 107.
Dave, this is worth pointing out for those not familiar with these kind of maps. This map represents one FM channel, one FM frequency. It's going to be different for other channels, but if you want to put a station on this frequency, I'm sorry, what'd you say this was?
This is 88.1.
Yeah, this is where you couldn't put one, and the white areas are where you could.
Where you could, right. And the yellow areas are where you could, but you could expect to get some interference.
Gotcha.
So the yellow areas typically surround the salmon areas by, you know, a few kilometers, sometimes a lot more. Mm-hmm. It just depends on the circumstances. But this shows for 88.1, every conflict. Channel 6, co-channel conflicts on 88.1, first adjacents on 88.3. Second adjacents on 88.5. There are some special rules for third adjacent. You don't have to protect a third adjacent, but if you do interfere, you're going to have a bit of a problem. And there are also 200 protected full service stations that aired radio reading services on subcarriers in the year 2000 who are on a list that have to be protected on the third adjacent. That's all included in this. All of that is built in here.
So
this is the non-commercial band. This is the reserve band below 92. This one happens to be 88.1, but they all look very similar. Now, once you get above 92 megahertz and you're into the commercial band, you no longer have to protect channel 6. So if we can have the next slide, Suncast, you'll see that now we don't have any more of those reds.
But we
still have a very similar situation. Got some space in upstate Maine. This one happens to be 97.5, I think. So we got some space in upstate Maine. We've got these little yellow areas here and there, and you know, some more areas that you could put a station. But again, they're generally areas where there's not a lot of population.
Now, I'd like to point out, Dave, that these salmon circles, the pink circles here, those are commercial stations with significantly larger coverage area than an LPFM would have. These aren't LPFMs. These are the stations that you can't locate too close to because you'll interfere with them and they'll clobber you if you're inside their area.
Right. Some of them are LPFMs and some are translators. They're all included.
Well, I do see some tiny little circles. Yeah, I see a few tiny circles. Yeah.
Those would be translators or LPFMs. Okay. The co-channel spacing for LPFMs is 24 kilometers or about maybe 18, 19 miles. So they can be pretty close together. So they don't preclude a whole lot. So when you see a tiny little spot like that one in Nebraska there. That's probably an LPFM or a small translator.
You know, if I was in the real estate business, I might think if you want to buy a cheap house or some cheap land, go to the white areas because ain't nobody there. Of course, out west, a lot of that is federal land. It's not for sale.
Well, yeah, that is true. BLM controls a lot of that terrain up there. And then when you look at Nevada, I mean, Nevada is basically Las Vegas, Elko, and sand.
Right. Yeah.
There are other places there, but that's, I mean, fundamentally, there's not a lot of population in that area.
And there's Reno. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And as you, if you start at Salt Lake and you go west, you're on Highway 50 or the interstate that goes through that, which is both considered like the loneliest roads in the world.
I'm sure. Well, cool. Okay. Well,
I've driven them.
So there are some slivers of space east of the Mississippi that you could put an LPFM on this frequency. And it's different for different frequencies. But
every frequency is different. And one of the cool things is that I take these 100 frequencies that make up the FM band, and I produce these maps for every single frequency nationally, like you see here, or in your local area, which we'll show a couple of examples of in a couple minutes. And when I upload them into a PDF document, you can use the scroll on your mouse, or you can use page up and page down and basically run the movie on the entire band. So if you're looking for a channel in a particular location, you can just scroll through the entire band, channel by channel.
Oh, okay.
It's really cool. I'm sorry we can't show that here. It was something that I really hoped to show. But if you think of these as you scroll your mouse, you can think of these circles as kind of moving around and, you know, coming and going, and it's a pretty cool effect.
Yeah. And even if you live in a near a populated area, you might find a channel that happens to have a sliver of yellow or white in an area that you'd be interested in your LPFM. And that's the frequency that you would start to be interested in.
And that's why a prospecting tool like this is very helpful. Let's go to the next. Let's see. This is going to be Corvallis Channel Finder. Channel Finder first.
So this is a way close up on kind of what we saw before.
Right. So Suncast, can you put up the Channel Finder for Corvallis? Do you have that?
Is that the document from the FCC? The output.
Yeah.
Okay. That's the PDF.
Okay.
There we go.
Okay. So here is. The FCC makes available a thing called a channel finder. It's available online.
Okay.
The only thing you need to know is latitude and longitude. And you can go look at the latitude and longitude of any community in the country online very easily. And you stick it in there. And this tells you what is available in that community. All 100 FM channels are studied. It happens very quickly. It gives you results that are very, very fast. And you'll notice that, here we have no channels that are completely available, but we've got one, two, three. I think there were four that have a second adjacent channel issues. If you scroll back up a little bit.
So they describe the issues. Yeah.
Okay. And so this 207, which is the channel number for 89.3, look at the note. The channel is short spaced to low power TV channel 6 station. That means that special rules apply. You can go to them and you can ask for a waiver, which they can grant or not. If they grant it, then you have a second adjacent issue to resolve with respect to KLCC. If we go down a little bit, there's 254, 98.7. You can see why I like to deal with channel numbers. It's just so much easier. But we have a total of four channels that are available. They all have second adjacent interference issues that need to be addressed with special studies, with maybe a special antenna, but need to be addressed anyway. They're not grantable as is without a special showing and, critical, a waiver request checkbox on the form. Okay, so now let's go to that Corvallis map. And now you can see, here's channel 265, isn't it? No, 280. Wait a minute. 289. That did not show up on the channel finder at all. And it's absolutely right. It didn't, because we used the coordinates of Corvallis. What it did not tell you is that nearby Corvallis, this frequency is wide open and it might be useful to you.
And you were saying that you're a visual person, because a textual output is going to tell you the truth for that point on the map, but there might be a point nearby. This is okay.
Precisely.
This is why some airlines offer, hey, if your dates are flexible, we'll show you other fares, maybe a lower one, you know, a day before, 3 days after, that kind of thing. Okay,
yeah, so that's why it might not go from Seattle. It might go from Bremerton, or you know, whatever. But this is why I say this kind of tool is really, really helpful if you're searching for a transmitter or you're searching for a channel to serve a community.
So what does this tell us? Where could we put something on the left?
Well, it could go with, you know, remember the yellow is an area where you could expect to get interference. Now this is very, very simplified. It really has nothing to do really with the real world. If you're serious about this, we want to do some studies using terrain data to determine what kind of interference you can really expect. But this is the very simplified methodology that the FCC came up with that says, okay, if you're in this yellow area, you could expect to get interference. If you're in this white area, you can expect not to.
This is mileage only, right? This is no terrain.
Mileage only. It has nothing to do with terrain. And if you know this part of the country, there's a world of mountains between Salem and Corvallis. None of this makes any sense in the real world.
Now, a consultant like yourself, Dave, would if you found a prospective location here, would you then go do, I don't know, what do you call it, a Longley Rice study or some other terrain study to see what your expected coverage might be?
Yeah, I use PTP, point-to-point protocol, or point-to-point. Mm-hmm. It's similar to Longley Rice. It has fewer adjustments you can make, so it's more consistent from one practitioner to another. The FCC accepts it just as well as they accept Longley Rice. I've used it for a number of cases. I happen to like it because it more closely reflects what I've experienced in the world, driving signals and listening to them, you know, having them drop out where the model says they should drop out.
Okay.
If you wanted to put an LPFM station in Albany, Oregon, we would then say, okay, we'll pick a transmitter site, we'll get it set up, and we'll run an interference study and see what you can expect your actual coverage to be. Now, if you wanted to put one in Lebanon, the FCC would not let you do that because it's short-spaced. But you do have the option in Albany. So that's the kind of thing that we're talking about. You know, the LPFM allocation system is purely mileage, as purely as anything gets with the FCC, mileage-based, right, distance-based, as opposed to interference-based.
Gotcha.
And that gets into some conflicts with translators, because translators are allocated based on contour overlap. And when terrain gets weird, you can get some really anomalous situations that are very difficult to resolve between a translator and an LPFM. But here we are. So the channel finder showed nothing in Corvallis, and it was right. There's something nearby.
And you and I know we're not looking at the entire file here. We're just looking at that one channel with Corvallis pretty well centered there. But you and I, before the show, looked at that, and you know, there were only a couple of channels that had any chance of being anywhere near Corvallis. The rest were all excluded by being in salmon, you know, pink areas. So the reason we're showing that graphic is here's one that, no, you can't get right in Corvallis, but you can go just outside Corvallis and maybe hit the audience that you're looking for, especially if they're on the west side of Corvallis.
Right. So let us travel across the country now.
Okay.
Westerly Rhode Island, and let's do the Westerly Channel Finder first.
Oh, and Westerly is the name of a town. Okay.
Westerly Rhode Island. Let's look at the Westerly Channel Finder. There we go. Okay. So here we have, again, the coordinates of the city. And as you scroll down, you'll see, 1, 2, 3, only three channels available and only with waivers. And then it says 269, 107, 101.7 is available. Okay. So we're going to look at the westerly map now. And this is for channel 225. Remember, that channel did not show up at all in the channel finder.
Oh, yeah.
But look how close to westerly you can be. I mean, that's...
Yeah.
2 kilometers west of east of town, maybe something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
And there are several other channels that are similarly situated. Again, the LPFM channel finder says no, it's not available. But yeah, in reality, it is. And if you look a little bit northwest of there, you find a tiny little spot east of Norwich where you could, if anybody lives there or you had some interest there, you could actually drop an LPFM station in there, and there's no way on earth you're going to find that opportunity with a channel finder type.
Right, right. Yeah, it's only graphically you would see that. Well, I know where that is. That's the east half of the pond on the Gunnison farm.
it could be totally underwater. But you'd be amazed how many commercial stations were allocated on the basis of little tiny spots like this.
You're right. You're right. Where you, and yeah.
TVs,
yeah.
As well.
And how does rounding work into this channel, this mileage separation? Does it figure in?
You can round to the next even number. Like, let's say the requirement is 24 kilometers. You can be 23.5 and still meet the spec. And these maps will take that into account.
Oh, they do. They've already taken in. Okay.
Yeah. If the rule states that a requirement is 24 miles or 24 kilometers or whatever it is, 23.5 is acceptable. If it says it's 24.1, then you're into 24.05, rounding up to 21. 24.1.
Interesting.
So you have to pay attention to the rule that you're reading in order to determine how to round it.
Okay. All right. Good. So, Westerly's got a possibility there in Rhode Island. And to help me with my geography, is that Connecticut immediately to the west of Rhode Island?
It is. It is.
Okay.
Yeah. That's the I-95 corridor up from New York to Boston. Go through New London, Groton, the submarine base there.
Then there.
Mystic, Connecticut. And into Westerly, and then you go through southern rural Rhode Island, which has some lovely, lovely beach communities, and then on up into Providence, and then up into the Baltimore or the Boston metro.
We're going to continue in a couple minutes. We're talking to Dave Doherty. Dave is an expert at many engineering things, and one of them is helping you apply for an LPFM. We're going to have some information about Dave's business called skywaves.com. You can go to his website there at skywaves.com and get you some consulting for seeing if an LPF ask Dave Doherty if an LPFM is right for you. And he can get you an answer pretty quickly. I'm Kirk Harnack. You're watching or listening to This Week in Radio Tech. And our show is brought to you in part by Broadcasters General Store and their featured manufacturer, Broadcast Tools. Now, you've known Broadcast Tools for many, many years, as I have. And one of the things that you probably don't know about, and I think that maybe because I think it's... Am I correct in saying that it's free? Suncast, if you pop that, did I provide you a page for that? I thought I did. I meant to. Yeah, the NetSwitch 3. Yeah, it's free. That's why you won't find it on any price list. The NetSwitch 3 free switcher control and scheduling software. Hey, not everybody needs this, but if you do, this is some pretty cool stuff. NetSwitch Free is a free PC-based graphical control and event scheduler application for Broadcast Tools switchers. Now, the NetSwitch software may be used with all of Broadcast Tools switchers, and along with switchers from other manufacturers that allow serial single computer or Ethernet LAN WAN operation. It can work both ways. Broadcast Tools really does, as you know, if you've used their equipment, and they make a huge variety of things. We certainly use their silent sensors at transmitter sites, places where we can't conveniently have an audio over IP network or a PC running. We'll use broadcast tools, hardware to alert us of dead air or a channel gone, that kind of thing. And Chris Tarr loves these things too. He uses the web-based silent sensors. But this NetSwitch 3 is, again, it's absolutely free. And maybe that's why you don't find the dealers recommending it a whole lot, because they don't make any money from it. But you can go to the Broadcast Tools website and check it out there. Broadcast Tools, listen up here if you're not familiar with them. They make satellite channel controllers to do satellite channel switching. They make audio mixers and distribution amps. They make silence monitors and program schedulers, especially when you use them with the NetSwitch 3. The Broadcast Tools line is available from top distributors, and one of those certainly is Broadcasters General Store. You can go to their website of Broadcasters General Store at bgs.cc. There you see it online. It's really convenient, bgs.cc. And, I don't know, in this day and age when it's sometimes tough to get people on the phone, maybe you don't want to get somebody on the phone. Maybe you do want to get somebody on the phone. BGS really has built their business around talking to you and listening to you on the phone. They are really set up this way, from their salespeople who work from home and the salespeople who work from their office in Ocala, Florida. They have got custom software that they have literally built over the last 20 or 30 years to get you accurate quotes, to get you the best discount you can possibly get, to find out availability and shipping options and how soon you can have your piece of equipment, whether you're ordering something from Broadcast Tools or maybe you need a CD player. Remember when you used to use those all the time? Maybe you need something like I do. I bought some Telos Alliance hardware and software lately, and we order ours through Broadcasters General Store. They got sharp pencils there. We get a nice discount, but no nicer than you'd get if you call them up. So contact Broadcast General Store at 352-622-7700. That's 352-622-7700. Put that on speed dial. I mean, put that into your phone's Rolodex, if you will, in your contact list, and you'll be really glad you did. I've been dealing with BGS for literally years when Sam Phillips owned some radio stations, and the guy who discovered Elvis, the guy who recorded Elvis's first song, had a... had a contract with Elvis for half his money for the rest of his life and sold it all for $33,000 and built a radio station all in Memphis, Tennessee. My goodness. Well, and hey, just a month ago, I got to spend the evening with one of Sam's sons, Jerry Phillips, at a gala awards event. Anyway, I didn't mean to run off on that topic, but BGS is such a great place and so many good people work there, and they really have sharp pencils and availability as good as anybody else's. Check them out. Thanks a lot, Broadcasters General Store. And thanks so much, Don Wingett at Broadcast Tools, for sponsoring This Week in Radio Tech. All right, I'm Kirk Harnack in the Telos Alliance studio in Nashville. Dave Doherty is with me right here. Dave, what part of the world are you in? I failed to ask. Where are you at?
I currently live in a place called Bainbridge Island, Washington, which is...
Yes, actually, you told me that a while ago, near Seattle.
Across the Puget Sound from Seattle. It's a 35-minute ferry ride. So we get access to the big metropolitan area, but we have a nice, just an easy lifestyle here on the island.
We'll get back to the LPFM.
Grandkids live about a mile away.
Which is nice.
That's why we're here.
What's your weather been there? What's your weather been like lately? Has it been hot like a lot of the rest of the country or not?
It has not been as hot as the rest of the country because we're basically surrounded by the Puget Sound. So our temperatures here are about 10 to 15 degrees lower than they are in Seattle typically on a hot day. It's been up in the 90s to 100, and we've had some inland temperatures up in 110 or so off and on. But we have had a very warm, dry summer here, to the point now where for the first time in a lot of people's memory, fire is a real concern. It's a very rural area. There's a lot of open fields. There's a lot of forest. And, it's just one of those things. You just have to be prepared for it. We have a very...
I think of Washington State, and I think of apple industry, and I think of the wine industry. Is any of that in your area? Is that more in central Washington?
That's across the Cascade Mountains from us. So Washington is... in the west, it's the Olympic Mountains and the coast, and then we have Puget Sound, which is the Seattle and the whole metropolitan area here. Then the Cascade Mountains, Mount Rainier, Mount Baker. And on the other side of the Cascades, you slope down into Yakima, Wenatchee, Moses Lake, all the way down into Spokane. That is orchard country on the slopes, wine country, and then it goes into farmland. There's some very fertile farmland in the center of Washington State. It's all made available by the fact that we have the Grand Coulee Dam and the basically unlimited power to run deep, deep wells to irrigate farmland.
Gotcha. All right. Well,
so it's an interesting place. It's very, very diverse.
We're here to talk about LPFM. And so what else, what more do we have to hit on this topic?
I think we've covered most of what we can cover in an hour. I would say if anybody here is interested in, taking advantage of some of these frequency searches, I'm more than happy to provide them, charge for them, of course. So I've got a lot of development time. But they're very useful, and I'm happy to provide them to other consultants who think they might be able to use them. I'll help people with applications. I'm not a lawyer. You need a lawyer. Trust me on this. LPFM applications need lawyers. Every I has to be dotted. Every T has to be crossed exactly the right way, because if you get into a competitive situation where you've got 2 or 3 or 4 or 10 applicants who are in a mutual exclusive group, then they go down and they look at everything all the way down to the most minute details. And there are special procedures you can use if you find yourself in an MX group. You can there are things you may be able to do, things you may not be able to do. But it's really the province of lawyers and engineers to work out what happens when you find yourself in an MX group. Most LPFMs, typically, in my experience in the last window, were singleton. They were not in MX groups, but I was involved in two that were three-way groups, and we had to negotiate. In both cases, we had to negotiate operating agreements and transmitter sites and all kinds of stuff among the three applicants that stood up.
Earlier in the show, I mentioned your website, skywaves.com, and actually, had I gone and read the couple things that are on your website, I would have known the answer to some questions. I'm glad I had a chance to ask you, and you answered verbally. But if you want to get a reminder of, for example, some of the requirements for LPFMs, it's right there on Dave's website. It's skywaves.com. If you want to know some of the requirements, basic information about LPFM stations, there's a link right for that. And I'll put these in the show notes, by the way. There's also a link that shows some sample plots of both in the both domains. Let's see, looking down on the earth and looking sideways at a path, for example, if you need to run an STL or a microwave path. Dave's got a lot of good samples there, and you can see how that works. Dave's been involved in construction projects as well. And then, is this page old or current? This is new commercial channels, Dave, that's got a list of commercial channels.
That's recent. At this point, maybe a year old. The FCC went through a couple of auction cycles for commercial channels that were allocated for non-commercial use. There's about 90 of them or so. They're officially non-commercial educational allocations, but they're in the commercial band.
Yeah, sure.
And there are certain circumstances in which you can have this done and all that. They went through a couple of auction cycles. Nobody was interested, so they removed the non-commercial nature of that allocation. So those allocations are now available for commercial use. You have to wait for a window. Window will come up sooner or later, and then commercial interests will be able to bid on those. And there's a list of those channels right on the website.
Oh, so I've got a question. I'm sorry, I don't have all the information here at hand. In Hawaii, on the island of Kauai, we have a station that is licensed to the little community of Hanapepe, and that's fine. Except that, of course, we're required to city grade Hanapepe, and because of the terrain of the island of Kauai, that's a little inconvenient because that's not where the population is. There's a small population, Hanapepe, and they deserve to be served. But our commercial interests dictate that we kind of like to serve, where the bigger population is. And so, here's where I don't know the details. Is it it seems like we applied for a non-commercial station to go there. And I don't know what class or what kind, but it seems like that's all getting worked out. So my question, I guess, comes up being, is there any kind of class of station that doesn't require a filing window that you can put in to replace something that you want to move out? Am I speaking just outside of my head, or is there some truth to what I'm thinking?
Yeah, there have been a lot of changes over the last 10 or 15 years. The rural radio policy came out. You can change, and what you're talking about is changing your community of license.
Yeah.
And I assume that would involve changing your transmitter site as well.
We would like to eventually, yes. We're in a very inconvenient location so that we can city grade Hanapepe as well as hit most of the rest of the populated part of the island.
Okay. So there's a pretty much absolute prohibition on removing the only station serving a community of any size.
Right.
The exceptions are if you can establish that the community dissolved and was taken over by the county or it merged with another community, stuff like that. Absent that, you're going to have to serve on a Hanapepe. So can you, in a, let's say, a non-commercial educational window, propose a new station to serve on a Hanapepe what we call backfill your coverage in that community?
That's the
allow
word,
allow you to move to a different community. The answer is yes, that can be done. It's fraught with all kinds of issues, but if you have a lot of patience, it's been done and it can be done.
Okay. But you mentioned a filing, you know, the next filing window. So that can't just be done outside of a filing window, I take it.
Right. No new station can be proposed outside of a filing window. There are some exceptions in Alaska for particular cases, but they don't apply anywhere else as far as I know.
Okay.
And so you, in Kauai, of course, the terrain there is such that you will never serve 100% of the population of the island. It's just not going to happen.
Exactly.
So you want a transmitter site that serves the most people you can get.
We're missing that cushy area of where the wealthy people vacation, and that's Princeville up in the northern part of the island.
That's going to be a tough one.
I know
something about Kauai.
And we found a tower or two that would be great to go on, but the owners of those towers think that they're made of gold. So,
well, if they're in Hawaii, they probably are. Having to hang an LPFM antenna in a tree. And some other things.
Really? Oh my gosh. Wow. At the very end of our show, Dave, what we usually do is save it for a tip of the week. And so I'm going to be looking to you in a few minutes for a tip of the week. What would you recommend people do? Let's say that you're part of a church organization or an ethnic group or, you know, a group of guys who, you know, likes to get together and, I don't know, play outdoor lawn darts on Thursday afternoons, but you'd like to have a radio station. You know, what's the next step for people who thought, well, we'd always, you know, thought about having a radio station to serve our community of like-minded interests, people, whatever it may be. We're going to get, I'd like to get step one and step two from you right after we come back from this announcement. Dave Daugherty is my guest. He's with skywaves.com. He's a consultant to the broadcast industry. And when LPFM comes along, Dave speaks up because he's a big fan of this service and how it helps people out. Our show is brought to you in part by Broadcast Bionics. And this past week, actually the past month, I've had the opportunity to install some of these containerized software programs that do broadcast things. So at my station, my new station in Oxford, Mississippi, I have put in an audio console, an Axia Altus audio console at the transmitter site running in a software container on a Linux server. Also put in a phone system, a Telos VXS phone system, also running in a software container on that same computer. And we can take phone calls, put them on the air. It's really cool. Just amazing. Well, Broadcast Bionics is letting you do the same thing, but in a way that's really, really easy. And if Suncast can bring up this is the virtual rack. Now, I know it looks like a server, but what's cool about this is Broadcast Bionics, and they got some clever minds up there. They have arranged this thing where I tell you, this thing's kind of like a vending machine. All right. You turn it on and you browse into it and you get like an app store of broadcast products that run in software containers. So you pick the things that you want. Let me suggest you pick a couple of Axia Altus consoles and load them up with some extra faders, if you like, and then load them up with WebRTC remote connectivity. Just turn those things on. Now, you'll still need to license anything you turn on that you want to use. You'll need to license it from their respective manufacturers. Telos Alliance, of course, is one of them. There's an Omnia Forza processing available. There we go. There's some Telos Alliance things that are available there, including the VXS phone system and the Altus console and the Forza audio processing is in there. And there's a couple other manufacturers represented as well. To be honest, I haven't paid close attention to who they are. I thought there was something in there from Diva and maybe even something from Orban. But it's like an app store. You fill out some registration information. You click on the icons for the things you want to install. And in a few minutes, bam, they are installed. And then you need to go license them from their respective manufacturers. And so what you get is broadcast functionality in this server. Of course, you got full possibilities for failover, for backup, things like that. And on this webpage, if you go to Broadcast Bionics, on this webpage, you can see a couple of video interviews with Dan McQuillan. And you know, on a previous, not too long ago, Twert show, we interviewed Dan and he demonstrated how these things work. So I highly encourage you to check out this kind of technology. You know, so many other industries have moved from purpose-built hardware, whatever it was, into the world of software containers. They run extremely reliable in a Linux operating system and broadcast with audio over IP and all the ways that we communicate using IP technology. You can have something that's fast, reliable, sounds absolutely perfect. I mean, the audio is just perfect from these things. And I love this. And the fact that Broadcast Bionics has made this so accessible and so easy with Virtual Rack, it's worth checking out. Go to bionics.co.uk or bionic.radio. We'll have links in the show notes and check this out. I'll put links to those video interviews with Dan McQuillan as well in the show notes. All right. Check it out. Virtual Rack from Broadcast Bionics. It's coming. Well, you know, it's where we are going as engineers and as an industry. All right. We got our last couple of minutes here with Dave Doherty on This Week in Radio Tech. Dave is a specialist in filing for stations, finding out where you can put a transmitter. And today we're talking about LPFMs because of the window that opens up in early November. Dave, all right, I'm looking for a tip of the week. What should people do who think they have an interest in owning a low power FM radio station?
Okay. So the first thing is, assess your audience, where they're located, how far spread out they are, and whether you can even serve them with an LPFM station. Uh-huh. What kind of programming you're going to want to feed into the transmitter to serve this population. Whether you have the resources to provide at least 8 hours a day of programming on a live basis. And if you go through that self-examination process and you feel, yeah, this is something we want to pursue, then get hold of a good engineering consultant and get a hold of a good FCC attorney. Start the process rolling. It's not too late. The actual FCC application form that they'll be using in November is already online, so you can set yourself up with what's called an FRN, a FCC registration number. Access the library, LMS system, licensing management system, act like you're going to start up a new LPFM radio station. Click the file and application and click on new LPFM, and that'll give you the form that is the basis of everything you're going to file with the FCC.
Gotcha. And you said this is not really a do-it-yourself project. You need some professional help to fill out the form correctly with information that will pass muster.
Yeah, the original idea was that any community organization with very little technical skills could theoretically go to the channel finder, find a channel, file the application, and go. And in reality, if you have no competition for that channel, then you can probably get away with that. But in reality, particularly in larger areas, there's going to be, after 10 years, there's going to be a lot of pent-up demand, and you'll probably wind up with a situation where you're competing with somebody for the channel, and that's when everything has to be just totally nailed down.
Good deal. Good deal. And there's your website that people can go to, and that is skywaves.com. If you have any other resources you'd like me to stick in the show notes, Dave, send me a quick email, and I'll put them in there as well. Dave Doherty, thank you so much for being with us. It's good to talk to you after it's been almost 3 years since we've seen you here on the show. So thank you very much for joining us. Always good to hear your happy voice.
Well, thanks. I'm glad to participate. Thanks for having me on.
All right. Dave Doherty's been our guest, LPFM expert. Skywaves.com is the website. I'm Kirk Harnack. Thanks so much to our sponsors. I hope you'll patronize them and give them your interest. And if you need something that they do, well, please ring them up, email them, go to their website, whatever it may be. Thanks a lot to Suncast for engineering today's show, producing it. I really appreciate Suncast's efforts. And thanks to Andrew Zarian, the founder of the GFQ Network. I hope, Chris Tarr should be with us back next week. In fact, I'm having dinner with Chris Tarr and Jeff Welton here this Sunday night, so I'll beat up on him. No, I'll give him a hug for you, okay? How about that? I'm Kirk Harnack. We'll see you next. I will, Dave. We'll see you next week on This Week in Radio Tech. Bye-bye.